All right, if you've listened this far, you know the deal. The book that came out of this podcast is called How the Internet Happened, From Netscape to the iPhone by me, available wherever fine books are sold. Also, the podcast I do these days is called The Tech Meme Ride Home. Search any podcast app for Ride Home, and you should find The Tech Meme Ride Home, which is all the day's tech news every weekday in just 15 minutes. If you like this show, you'll love that one.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to the Internet History Podcast. I'm your host, Brian McCullough. Today we're going to be talking to Alexander Tatic. Alex was a founding engineer of both Mosaic and Netscape, so he'll be able to give us some great behind-the-scenes stories about working on both of those projects. Quick reminder, if you enjoy these interviews and want to give us a hand, all we really need you to do is go to iTunes and leave a review. Really helps us out. And now, here's Alex Tatic. Today we're talking with Alex Tatic. Alex, thanks for coming on the Internet History Podcast.
Well, thank you.
So my first question is always the most basic one. You were born in Belgrade in what was the former Yugoslavia, correct?
Yes.
And I think that you were schooled around the world. I think you went to school in Kuwait. Is that correct?
Yes, British high school in Kuwait.
So when did you come to the U.S.?
I came to U.S. in 1984 because Yugoslavia would not accept my British high school diploma. So I had to pick between some English-speaking countries, and I thought Britain was too small. So I came to U.S. And I was clueless.
I heard that you ended up in upstate New York, and you thought that that was right outside of New York City.
Yes, I didn't realize how far away I was until we tried to go there by subway.
So you ended up going to college first at BC in Boston?
Actually, it was San Bonaventure, upstate New York. Mm-hmm. It was my New York City destination. Then I realized what a mistake I made. I asked my friends, what was the most European city in the United States? My friend said Boston, so I applied to Boston College. And that's how I ended up at Boston College.
And are you doing computer science? What was your...
Oh, yeah. I fell in love. Well, basically, I started computers in Kuwait because once when I moved there, I was a junior in high school, and I did not speak English very well, and I was also trapped at home 24/7 except for the bus that took me in from high school. So I asked my parents to buy me a computer that I saw at school and I loved, and that was it.
Did it happen to be a Mac?
No, that was too early. It was a Commodore 64.
Okay.
I started coding, and I was like, now I know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
So how did you pick up the name Mac Daddy then?
Oh, because when I was at BC, I saw Macintosh in Kuwait for the first time, but it was just too unaffordable. But when I was at BC, it was part of the Apple college program. So we had Mac, so I got a Mac and started coding the Mac. And that's how I got my first job, and that's how I got a job at NCSA too. So
right,
you know,
so
all thanks to Macintoshes.
So you do your graduate school is University of Illinois, and
yes.
So how did you come to get the job at the NCSA?
Well, I was not accepted on a scholarship, so I had to work to pay for my school, and the NCSA had a great research assistantship that they asked me to do, so I joined them. It was really not a research assistantship. It was more like coding on demand. We were just hackers. They had a lot of interesting projects to work on.
Do you remember what you were working on at the time?
Oh, I think it was called Polyfacet, which was, I can't quite remember. There were several projects I was on, but it was some kind of a 3D stuff on the Mac, mesh modeling, something like that.
Visualization programs.
Yes. Well, NCSA was heaven. They had all the toys, you know, from thinking machines to Craze to Macs to beautiful network. It was awesome.
Including, you know, obviously super fast hookup to the internet. Do you remember when you first encountered the web at all?
Well, I first encountered the web. I actually don't remember the exact time. Being at NTFA, you were already on email. You were reading news. So we were on the web before there was the web, right? And then Mark comes up and he's like, hey, I got this cool new toy. Check it out. And that's kind of like how we first encountered the web.
Do you remember hearing for the first time about the Mosaic project at all?
Well, yeah. I was one of the kind of like, you know, hacker guy. I wouldn't call it hacker, whatever. The guy who knew how to code. So there weren't too many of us, but we mostly lived in the basement of NCSA, and we coded a lot, and we always hung out together, you know, talking about coding mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did I hear about it? So at that point in time, one of the projects finished and Mark was looking for the next thing that he wanted to work on, and he found the web. So, of course, he told us. So it kind of spread through the basement pretty fast.
So Mark and Eric Bina do their browser on X Window first, right? So when are you approached to start working on a Mac port?
Well, I think very soon. After X Browser was released, they said, hey, it would be really cool if this ran on everything. So as I was the best Mac guy around, I was hanging out with these guys. I started working on it. It was me. And that's how I became the Mac Daddy.
So there really wasn't any sort of, you know, assigning of duties or anything. It's just everybody.
No. This was basically a bunch of guys sitting in front of their computers all day long thinking stuff up.
And it's not. And so it's just these ideas come out of your interests. And so again, it wasn't like.
Well, NCSA had a mission. They had projects that we had to work on and all that stuff. But. Mm-hmm. You know, the cool thing is their mission was very well, you know, it was like science and communication and this and that. So NCSA's mission was very well aligned with what Mosaic was going to do. When Mark discovered Mosaic, I mean, when Mark started the Mosaic project, I think we just finished one of the other projects. I forgot its name. So there was really nothing on his plate. So Mosaic was discovered because he was looking for the next thing to do.
So what was it like when Mosaic blows up, when all of a sudden, you know, this is, you know, the internet's still young, well, the web especially is still young, but it suddenly becomes, you know, the hottest thing around for people that are on the web.
Well, I mean, the web was not that big. So there are several interesting things. One is working with Mark was in those days was pretty awesome. So we got really excited about this project right away, right? It was obvious that if it worked, it was going to be big. We were like, oh, there could be newspapers on the net and all, you know, all this information can be out there for everyone. How phenomenal would that be? Now, at the same time, it was not entirely obvious that that was what's going to happen, because the rest of the world saw it very differently. They saw a whole bunch of closed networks, such as AOL, CompuServe. I think Microsoft had their own Microsoft MSN. So what the rest of the computer industry was thinking about at that time was a whole bunch of closed networks. Initially, the web was mostly colleges. And almost every web address you went to was .edu.
Right.
Right. So it was not obvious that, you know, how big it was going to get. But it was definitely growing at a very fast pace. There were more and more users all the time. It was really exciting. The coolest thing early on was when we knew that we were on a threshold of something big was when New York Times published their first article about the web by John Markoff.
Right, it was on the front page.
It was. I think it was on the front page. And the phone system crashed. There were so many people calling in that basically all the long-distance lines into, like, Urbana, Champaign, or whatever, wherever we were, nobody could get through anymore. So at that point, we were like, wow, this is cool.
So how does the NCSA, how do they feel about this project taking off? I mean, you know, I'm kind of skipping ahead here to...
You guys
leaving for Netscape, but I'm curious because, you know, a huge portion of this team does end up leaving. Is it because that there's some sort of friction with the NCSA? Has this gotten so big so fast, or what happens there?
So we were very lucky. I think there were about six of us on the original team, and we kind of got the web. We got the meaning of what it was going to be, and we were all very much on the same page. Mm-hmm. So we had this very strong, we were very good coders. We programmed all, we lived and breathed code in that basement. Mark was there all the, we were all just living there 24/7. And the cult, actually the web, when it started, it was actually highly addictive. Because for the first time you release something, you had all these users. And the cool thing was that the users were around the world. So nowadays it's kind of commonplace, but over that, back then it's like you would be working and your US users are going to sleep. But then you work alone for a little while and then boom, you have like all these emails with your European users that are just waking up. Mm-hmm. So you were just running on adrenaline all the time because there was so much stuff to do. And
well, and also when you push out a new feature, you can get feedback instantaneously.
Oh, the feedback was instant. And all this stuff, you know, is taken for granted now. Back then, it was completely revolutionary. Back then, you used to ship software on CD-ROMs.
Right.
So it was it was quite a rush. And the funniest, I mean, the coolest part early on was that, you know, Mark was the X guy. All the communication went directly to him. I was the Mac guy. Anybody having anything to do with the Mac browser, any bug, I would be responding to them personally. Mm-hmm. And the same was true for the Windows team. So there was this really intimate, crazy thing where there's, you know, tons of people talking to you and you're just one guy right there doing stuff.
Right.
And you ship it, you know, fast. Anyway, today it's all quite common. Back then it was insane. So what happens is we have this project that becomes insanely popular. Mm-hmm. At the same time, this project has not, you know, NCSA is a kind of government research lab. I'm not sure if it's a research lab that gets a lot of its funding from the government, the university.
Right,
and all.
Right.
And this project was not part of any particular grant. It was kind of originally budgeted out of the general budget. So there was no money coming in because of it. Of course, as soon as it got successful, that was going to change.
Right.
So instead of the original six hacker structures, Now that the grown-ups are coming in and saying, you know, we need to run this as a serious project. You know, we get some help. There is some cool stuff. We get the Colleen, who is like a really cool UI person. So we get a really cool new spinning globe. Mm-hmm. And this and that. But then at the same time, you have a lot of people who have very different agendas and very different visions of what the web is going to be like. For example, one of the early ideas by higher-ups was that we should track everybody and send that data back to NTSA because this is going to be the world's greatest social study project.
So they were thinking of it as a research project.
Well, it was a research project. I mean, even Mosaic itself was a research project, but their vision, we were like, that is insane. You can't do that.
Right. Because you guys have this completely different vision that's so much broader than that.
Exactly. We're like, you know, this is just the web. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, there are all these other interesting things that we need to get done. We need images, we need multimedia, we need, you know, whatever. Million different extensions that need to get done. And this guy is like bugging us with some social research project. We don't like that. The problem is now we're starting to get bogged down. So it becomes a fight of who is going to determine the future of Mosaic. Now, there's business interest involved. People want to license it, this and that. And with the licensees, they would like you to implement a particular feature or work on that their path platform. So you're starting to get into all these decisions about what the six of us are going to. Oh, and also there's other people coming in and starting to code with us. And they're not quite on the same fanatic level we are. For example, we were very good. And nowadays I kind of feel a little bit more charitable toward my coworkers at that time. But at that time, what I was thinking was, you know, who are these people coming in and like ruining all my code?
Right. I think there's a quote that in one of the books that someone says that, you know, you had basically done the Mac version yourself, and then all of a sudden there's all these new people assigned to you. And
yes. Well, they're not assigned to me. They're my bosses.
Oh, even worse.
Well, no, it's not worse. I mean, it's a collaborative relationship, but they've decided that Apple has just come up with a new voice recognition framework. So we're going to add voice recognition to the web and also make an even prettier spinning icon. I remember my first big release, 1.0, was I had to release another thing right away because that new pretty spinning icon, it was leaking an icon every time I'd span. So if you started a long download, by the time you're done with the download, you'd be out of memory. And that change went in, you know, 2 days before the release over my big objections. And anyway, so it's that kind of stuff. We were used to this insanely fast pace because we were all on the same page. We had a clear vision and we were just going flat out. And suddenly you have bureaucracy coming in.
Chris Wilson described it that it was just personality conflicts, basically.
Yeah, well, personality and the whole thing is like we have this one vision of the web, and our vision is just like the pure internet. Like we just want, you know, we just want the browser. That's the thing. And I think the other people's visions were different. They want something for NCSA. They want something for their company. Our vision is just like, oh, we just want it. This is just awesome.
So at some point, Mark Andreessen heads out to California. And do you recall how you heard that he was coming back? I'm referring now to the trip that Mark and Jim Clark make back to Illinois to recruit you guys.
Yeah, so Mark goes to California and he starts working at EIT, which is some kind of a server web company. And we were all really sad because working with Mark is amazing. He was the leader. He was the natural leader. And we miss him. Now, he was there. He was actually like the voice that would always stand up to power at NTSA. He just wouldn't, you know. There was no one. he was a very strong advocate for what we wanted. Without him, we're still doing pretty good coding work, but we can't push as fast as we want. It's more like now we've just become programmers. Before, we were more like a team on a mission. And Mark goes to California, and he's no longer working on Mosaic. And we're all very sad about this development because we're like, Mark, how can you leave this? Mm-hmm. But we understand. He had to leave, and if he couldn't leave at MTSA, he had to leave. And being he just graduated. He graduated that January. I got my master's. He got his undergrad degree. Mm-hmm. And so he did leave, came to California. Anyway, so we kept in touch. And then I think he talked to us. He told us that he met Jim Clark. He was very excited about it. And then, I don't know, one thing led to another. And he said, you know, we are not going to do Nintendo Network. I think we're going to do the web. So they flew in. It was phenomenal. We got to meet Lou Montulli. Jim Clark came in. We really didn't know much about Jim Clark, but we trusted Mark. He gave us all these papers to sign, and we just met him for one night. Next morning, we all walked in and quit, and we said, we're going with Mark. And was on Thursday. On Saturday, we were in California picking out apartments, and a week later, we moved out here.
That's amazing. And there was no hesitation at all. You just knew right away that this was what you wanted to do.
Well, we wanted to work on, you know, we wanted the web, the Mosaic, the browser, and Mark was the best guy to do it.
Did you make T-shirts or something that everyone signed?
I did. I actually made T-shirts. I got I kind of had a feeling this was coming, so I made a T-shirt to commemorate the occasion. I got the girl who made our spinning icon, Colleen, to give us the original graphic, so we printed these big T-shirts and everybody signed them. Mm-hmm.
And I have also seen the picture on, I think it was your website, where you have the picture on the whiteboard of you're all heading off, you're packing up the truck and you're moving to Mountain View.
Yes. Oh, by the way, on that website, did you see that webpage of the Mark Andreessen? This is Global Hypermedia.
Mm-mm. Oh, the video.
No. There is one of the early web pages when Mark demos the web.
Okay.
It's awesome. Basically, he has these little sound icons, and then he speaks the web page out. And what is Global Hypermedia?
I'll look for that, and I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So now you're out in California, and is it back to, the band's all back together, so is the working environment back to how you liked it now? You're all working in the same direction. You're working fast. You all have the same vision. Is it what you had hoped for?
Yes. Well, our vision has changed slightly, right? By this time, the stuff we worked on, Mosaic, Well, it's pretty entrenched. I mean, everybody loved Mosaic. Everybody used Mosaic. And here we are out there in California, and we're like, will we ever be able to beat ourselves? We're basically racing against ourselves. And we're like, yeah, but it's going to take some time. And, you know, they might pull something together, and it could be a real competition for a while. So we come down here, and actually, an interesting thing is about coming to California. Mm-hmm. So I would class what might be relevant to the kids today is back then, being a geek was very different from today. It was I don't think it's glamorous today, mm-hmm. but it's not weird.
Right.
Back then, it was definitely weird you felt weird being a geek. I mean, it was not common. And, we were all misfits of one way or another. And so we come to California, and it's like Mecca. You're just driving 101, and there is Sun, there is SGI, there is Oracle. And, you know, there is Fry's, where you can walk in and buy all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. There is all, it was mind-blowing. It was beautiful. I felt like I've come home. So anyway, we come in, and we don't know anyone around here. Everybody moves, you know, within 5 minutes drive of an office. And we just start working. Oh, we're back together. We have the same vision. But now we also have the Jim Clark and the backing. Like, the other stuff is going to happen to back us up and mm-hmm. hinder us. So it's kind of cool. We're very excited.
Well, and now you can do it properly, right? Before this was just a Lark project, but now you can really do it the right way.
Well, you know what? Any time you code something for the second time, it's a lot easier, and you can do it a lot better. And we have Lumen Tooling, who is awesome, and we have Ari, and there's like all these other super cool people that we've known about coming. An interesting thing was that when we were doing Mosaic, we went to the first World Wide Web conference. There were 30 people there total. Mm-hmm. So that's how small the original web was. It was like everybody who was anybody who was coding anything was in that room with 30 people. And, you know, when the Netscape started, within months, half of those people are going to be working with us. Mm-hmm. Like everybody who kind of had the same vision we did.
Right.
Which was great. And also we had no social lives of any kind, so we just kind of lived them. Oh, and we have something to prove. We have to kill Mosaic.
Yeah, so, that leads to the birth Mozilla. Of Mozilla, yes.
Mosaic killer. Mozilla.
Who was the person that came up with that concept or drew the Mozilla?
Oh, I think, I'm pretty sure Jamie drew the Mozilla.
Okay.
Now, who came up with the name? I think it was Jamie Zawinski, but I'm not exactly sure.
Jamie Zawinski, okay.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know. It's been lost. In my mind, I have no idea. I remember it happened like while we were walking to lunch one day. But
in your memory, though, so it's you don't have a social life. You don't know anybody out there. So the long hours, the long hours and the sleeping under your desk, you guys don't mind that at all at this point.
No. Well, yeah, that's just what we do. What's interesting, it kind of, you know, reflecting upon this, it's like all these things are completely new to us, and we are just doing it because, you know, I mean, we're working around the clock because that's what we used to do before. And, you know, you have users 24/7. Why not work around the clock? And but now, looking in retrospect, it's like 4 years later, 5 years later, like the entire valley will be living the same lifestyle,
right?
Which is really funny. But those people actually have lives. We really didn't have any lives outside of the office. So of course, we're going to be at the office all the time. I mean, I had no furniture. Why would I ever go home?
So, are you essentially doing the Mac version again, or what are you working on?
Yeah, I'm the Mac guy.
Okay.
Again, same thing, same setup. We have three platforms, except Eric had moved the setup. An X guy, he's now doing the parser. Mm-hmm. And we have Luke, who is doing the networking. So we have a couple of guys moving to cross-platform, and then you have the front-end guy. I'm the Mac guy. I don't know, somebody else was the X guy. And
do you remember when your beta finally launches and you get to see it, get to see the downloads come in and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. So before it launches, it's just really exciting, five or six. I mean, it was like, I don't know, how long did it take us? Like 5 months? And we have all this like really cool new stuff. We have wonderful offices. It was awesome. There's people getting hired. Like the rest of the company seems to be humming too, but we're just batting down at our desk. It's just really pleasant. We're just working around the clock. So, but we also, you know, are joined by a lot of Silicon Valley veterans from Silicon Graphics and all around the valley, like JG. I think Brendan was there already. I can't remember how early he was. Anyway, these guys are a little more savvy. So when we launched, for example, I think JG was the one who hooked it up. He had our FTP server. And when we announced it on WW Talk, we had a different sound effect for a different download of each client got its own sound effect. So there was like a frog, smashed glass, and lightning, I think, for like X, Mac, and Windows. Mm-hmm. So everybody gets into this big dark room. I think we release somewhere around, I don't know, in the middle of the day or maybe later. And we're all sitting in this room just listening for the sounds. And as soon as our email goes out, like within a minute, there is some guy in Australia trying to download. And you can hear like the smashing glass. And, you know, then a couple of minutes of silence and then another croak. Oh, and then there was a cannon. And then there would be like a cannon. And then it started getting faster and faster. And within like 6, or we were all just sitting there drinking beer, just, you know, coding a little bit maybe and listening. And like within like 5 or 6 hours, there was just the cacophony of like explosions and croaks and lightning and cannons. It was just awesome because people were downloading it from all over the world. So we're like, okay, we got something. Everybody loved it.
You've kind of touched on this a bit, but I mean, you've gone on to work at other startups. I think you went to ePinions with Lou.
Is that right?
Being as how, you know, Netscape was not the first startup in the world, but it was, you know, the first web startup, and it sort of did kind of set the template. How do you feel? Was it a different environment than other startups that you've been involved with? I mean, I guess it was because you're not following any template, you're making it. But how would you compare Netscape to other startups you've worked on?
Interesting thing. Early on, in discussions with Mark over beer and other guys, all the Mosaic guys, we at that point when we got into fights with our management, we were like, you know, this government stuff is really annoying. You know, there's people are in position of power because of what their titles, if not because of their coding. What would be really cool is just to have a purely commercial company like com.com.com. There was like pure meritocracy based and there was none of this government stuff. And it would be even cooler if we could just like be on a big boat, just sail around the world. So that was like one of our daydreams. Mm-hmm. So a little, and you know, com was not a common URL back then.
Right.
Yeah, but so, and you know, and then you fast forward to year 2000 and it's like .com is like everywhere. It's insane.
Right.
So anyway, it's like all your dreams have come true. So, okay, so how does working at Netscape compare to other startups? Well, I feel that Netscape was like... Netscape was like a religious quest. It was you were changing the world, but not like changing the world a little bit, like fundamentally. You felt it like in a big way. You're out there to like destroy the existing order in many ways. And that was what the whole company was about. The IPO, the press we were getting, it was kind of incidental. The thing we were building was the thing. That was what it was all about. It was not about us. It was like we were all on a mission. Netscape was truly a mission. The other startups I worked on, you know, they have a bit of a missionary zeal to them, but it's not, it's a bit more self-conscious. You know, we should do this. It's not as crazy. Like, we were like religious zealots at Netscape. We're like internet, the web, browser. This is who we are. This is it. The other startups are not quite as insane. Not quite so zealot-like about who they are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, like they'll make desks out of doors because some other startup made desks. And Netscape mm-hmm. was also very organic, as I said, because we didn't really have any templates. So everything we did was just because, I don't know, we didn't know anything else.
Right.
There were no other options. I mean, there was no internet then to, you know, Google everything before.
Right.
And kind of do any research. So we were just kind of taking a stab at it. And what I like about it, I think a lot of the choices that were made then were the right ones, like the JavaScript, the CSS, and all that stuff. It's a whole bunch of technology that's still in use today. Mm-hmm. And even Mozilla still lives. We kind of felt that these were like the things that we're fighting for. It. So we were just fighting for the technology, for what we believed in. SSL too. Although I don't know about the whole certificate chain, but
do you have any particular memories of the IPO at all? I've heard from other guys that it wasn't really that big a deal at the time. Like, yeah, it was just a regular working day.
It was not what that was all about. Not in the engineering. I think was a bigger deal in some other parts of the company. But the engineering, I think I slept through the IPO itself, but because my usual work hours were till about 4 or 5 a.m., then I would go back, sleep till like 10, then come into the office. So I just stumbled into the office as usual, and everybody was kind of like hopping around saying, hey, look, we went public, you know, made some money, mm-hmm. great, stock is up, and then we went back to work. But it was great. You know what, I at the time I didn't appreciate it. Where the money really came in handy is, you know, after Netscape blew up.
Right.
And it's like, well, everything blew up, but at least I got some cash to figure things out.
So to that, were you guys aware right away, you know, it's not, you guys don't get to bask in it too long before Microsoft starts to come after you. Was there a sense of competition between you guys and, you know, when Internet Explorer comes out and you're, you know, trying to compete feature for feature and things like that?
I don't think that we got beaten on a feature by feature thing because, yeah, The hard part about the fight with Microsoft, it was not just a technical fight, right?
Right.
They paid other people. My biggest, my personal humongous disappointment was, so I've always been a Mac guy, although everybody laughed at me. Mm-hmm. Like the whole Mac Daddy, that was not a cool thing at Netscape. Everybody's like, why are you working on that crappy little computer with no virtual memory? Like, I was the only one who had to worry about running out of memory because everybody else had virtual memory. No, not the Macs. So we had to write our own socket libraries and all that. So Macs were not exactly, you know, popular hacker computers there then. But I loved the Mac. I loved the UI, all that stuff. And then when Mac, and I knew Netscape was the best browser on the Mac. And then, you know, Apple decided to ship Internet Explorer with the Mac because Microsoft gave them like $100 million investment. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of like the stuff we were fighting. It was not purely technical. We kept up. And technically, you know, we were pretty good. But the Microsoft guys have shipped software for the longest time. And I think they were developing like 3 versions of the browsers simultaneously. As opposed to us who were working on one and really didn't have a time for good. So we made some technical mistakes here and there, but the fight was really lost in the in Microsoft kind of business assault, cutting off our air supply, making the price of the browser zero, and even paying people to take our browsers. I mean, to take their browser instead of people were willing to pay us to ship ours, but they would say, look, not only will we give you ours for free, but we'll actually give you money to ship ours. So they cut off our air supply. So that's how the fight was lost.
When I spoke to Lou Montulli, he said that for many years he was bitter about that whole experience. You know, time has maybe healed things a bit, but Did you feel the same way? Were you bitter about how things turned out vis-a-vis Microsoft?
You know what I was really bitter about? It being sold to AOL. I mean, okay, Microsoft, a worthy opponent. Yes, did they fight fair? No, they did not. But, you know, losing to Microsoft, you know, I don't mind. I mean, I do mind. I hate them, but it's understandable. Now, being in a market where Netscape got sold to AOL, that was just depressing. I mean, that was the time I quit. I think my last day at Netscape was the AOL acquisition announcement. Hmm. That was the saddest day.
Well, I don't want to wrap things up on that note. Let me dial back real quick and ask you about Mark Andreessen at Netscape. Did he?
I can't really tell you much of Mark at Netscape because I rarely saw him.
That's what Lou said, too.
Yeah, Mark was already on a different level. He had moved away from coding into the executive suite. And Mark never looks back.
And what was your impressions of working with Jim Clark?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jim Clark was part of the executive suite. Mm-hmm. We were part of the executive suite. We just all had dinner, like our 20th anniversary dinner last week. Mm-hmm. I adore Jim Clark. Mm-hmm. I wish I got to work with him more. But I've never really worked closely with him. So you wanted some nerd detail. But well, Mark, although he didn't code, when he did code, he was awesome. One thing he did do in Mosaic that nobody ever appreciated, but it was really hard. There was this weird protocol called WAIF that is long gone. Uh-huh. It was a search protocol. Anyway, it was like as ugly as LDAP is, something people might be familiar with. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and there was like this one library in the world that actually spoke WAIF because once, you know, it was one of those things. You write it once and you never want to write that code again, but it didn't work. It was not interruptible. And Mark, I think, spent, several weeks in hacking on this horrible, horrible piece of code. Then he made the world's first interruptible WAIF library because he couldn't stand it. When you click the WAIF URL, you could not interrupt it if the server was down. Mm-hmm. So he had the programmer chops. Back when he worked on Mosaic. Once we moved to Netscape, he never saw the code again. Jim, on the other hand, I heard, always tries to code a little bit. Like when he did his yachts, he tried putting some code in and stuff.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So one thing, I mean, this is the stuff I'm thinking about these days. It might not be super interesting. But for me, I'm not used to be in a winning position. Mm-hmm. I come from a long tradition of geeks where, you know, you're just not, I mean, you're not the winner. You're the guy who's really technical and all that. But it's really weird to see that the division we had has just won over completely. And that revolution is like still being played out. It's gone, you know, about 15 or maybe 10 years ago, it's kind of gone beyond to what I could envision. And it's still like moving ahead full steam. As Mark said, software eats the world. Mm-hmm. So, and another interesting thing is I got to tell you, this is the really funny part of the story. So when we came here, so we were, you know, six geeky guys. And what we would do every once in a while to take a break from work was go to a really fancy restaurant and eat. And the funny part is every time we would show up at a fancy restaurant, they would put us like at the worst table because we were six geeky guys that didn't look good and, you know, wearing Kansas University shirts or something. And it would be next to the bathroom. Sometimes I think we went to Lulu's and they like when we walk in, they kind of look at us like, who are you people? And then they would open up a whole new dining room and put us in there alone. So, and we used to call this the Netscape table. So every time we would go to the restaurant, they would be like, hey, are we going to get the Netscape table again? It was always like the one farthest away that nobody wants to look at. So that's what it was like in 94. And now it's like 2014, and the whole geek internet culture has completely taken over San Francisco. I mean, the startup I'm working with right now, they're like on Maiden Lane, which is downtown Union Square, where right. All San Francisco used to be, which is just crazy. So it has like completely and utterly won. So, of course, now I'm always, as I said, I'm not used to be the winner, so I'm always like, oh, this can't be good. People are in it for the wrong reason. Why are they all acting so geeky and stuff?
You don't trust it.
Exactly.
So to you, the thing that blows your mind 20 years on is that the geeks have taken over.
Well, I don't know if it's true everywhere, but it's definitely here in the Valley. It seems to be that way. Maybe I'm living in a bubble, but it is that. Yeah, our inside jokes are no longer geek inside joke. It's just popular culture. Yeah, it's crazy. And you can go to the restaurant in your geeky outfit and you'll be treated well. And even the women don't run away from you.
Yeah.
So, but to me, it's like frankly mind-blowing. I know they're even talking about the inclusion of women. I mean, I think it's awesome that the women doing computer science, mm-hmm. where I come from, like women wanted nothing to do with us. Like on a grand scale, just that we were just not interesting. So anyway, it's just funny.
Well, so hopefully the idea is there's some 14-year-old coder out there listening right now, and she is she's going to be happy.
I wish it was like this when I grew up. But as I said, back then, just women just – it was just not – I mean, not just women, but like anybody sane would not go into that field.
Right. Well, right. That's interesting. Like, if you could look back at yourself when you were 25 and you're doing all this stuff, could you do it now? If you had to go back and do it over again, like, could you do the hours? Could you do the intensity?
You know, I'm actually a very serious family man right now. I mean, I have three kids. I adore them. It's actually funny. Most of these early engineers at Netscape all ended up being these like family guys that spent a lot of their time with the kids. Anyway, so for that reason, I would not do it right now. But ask me in 2 years when, you know, I'm done changing my last diaper in a heartbeat.
With the right idea.
Yes, I could have, you know, I just loved it. It was really cool. It was a great feeling.
Well, Alex, congratulations on 20 years.
Oh, thank you. I know. It makes me feel like a fossil.
No, hopefully not. if all this stuff is ancient history, then believe me, we're all old at this point.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, thank you. You're welcome. I enjoyed it. It's funny. I don't think about this stuff all that much. But, you know, it's funny. Every time I do think about it, like seriously, it'll raise the hair at the back of my neck.
Out of fondness or
no? It's just it was you know, I'm not religious, but that was the closest I've ever gotten to the religious feeling almost. It was like, it was just, we were just one with the idea.